Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this special edition of Kate Loving and the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Schenck of KateLovingSchenck.com, PrayerPrescriptions.com, and the author of the upcoming book, Prayer Prescriptions, Spiritual Remedies for Long-Lasting Health. My guest is Maureen Torpey, author of Going Forward, Downsizing, Moving, and Settling In. Is it necessary to take a vow of poverty as we age and get rid of all of our, quote, stuff, unquote? Maureen tells all. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. Joining me now is Maureen Torpey. Hello, dear Maureen.
Hello, Kate.
Now, I know that your book has a lot more to do with aging, because you're talking about downsizing at all ages. But I think you are trying, also appealing, I should say, to the baby boomer crowd also, you know, just zooming in on all of the stuff that we have to consider.
Primarily the baby boomers, but it made me chuckle when you said the vow of poverty, because it has nothing to do with that.
I know. You know how it is. Well, actually, in a way, if people aren't planning properly, what happens is they downsize, they get older, and then the state takes all of their money, and they actually do die in poverty. But that's a whole different issue.
Yeah.
So I was just curious, what prompted you to move to write this book?
Well, there were two things, and the first one happened a number of years ago, and it really impressed me in a profound way. My mom had reached the stage that she couldn't live alone, and her health was deteriorating faster than I understood, because I lived many miles away and didn't see her that often. So it ended up that she was in a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
And that upset me to no end, because not because she wasn't getting good care, because she was, but it was the whole concept of she worked so hard all her life, and here she was living in half a room.
Mm-hmm.
And then
we did
get her a private room after that. And she needed full care, so there was no way she could live anywhere else. But, you know, I just couldn't believe that as anybody, would work so hard for so long, and this is where we'd end up.
Right.
And there wasn't much space for anything personal, but we took in, some pictures for the wall and a little table and a couple of things. But so I began thinking, like, what's life all about? Why are we doing all the things we're doing? And I wasn't really prepared emotionally to deal with anything. And, she had called her sisters and said, come and take anything you want. And I thought, yeah, that's a great idea. But I wasn't prepared for what happened.
Mm-hmm.
They came in and they did what she asked them to do. There was nothing nefarious or anything going on. And then I thought, over the years, I thought, I wonder if other people are feeling the same as this. It seems it's the logical thing to do. It's the right thing to do. But you have to be ready for it when it happens. And, as I said, I was mulling this over for many years. And then I get this great flash about a year and a half, 2 years ago, that hey, baby boomers are reaching retirement. They're going to be on that track to needing to live in a smaller space for a variety of reasons. And then I realized there was no resources for anything anything to help people approach downsizing. So I thought, why not write it? I've got the experience from personal experience with my mom, and I've downsized myself a few times and mm-hmm. moved a few times, and my clients talked about it. And I thought, I can write this book. Why not? So that's where it came from.
And you've written a few more books about on the same topic. So what are they?
Oh, on organizing.
Yes.
Yeah. The other two are, let me just think of them. There's the Christmas workbook, how to plan a simplified Christmas. And the other one is called Let's Get Organized, 172 Tiplets to Simplify Life.
Wonderful. My gosh. So now you have three books under your belt. That's terrific.
I do.
I was thinking about, it just seems to me, now just a quick question about your mom. Did she move from a big house to a very small room, it sounds like?
There was an intermediate step.
Okay.
She moved from a three-bedroom house to a two-bedroom apartment. Mm-hmm. And then about 10 or 12 years later, I guess it was about 10 or 12 years later, she had a fall and fractured her spine and then ended up in the nursing home.
These darn falls, right?
You know, the older we get, the more serious they can be.
So it's very important to practice Tai Chi and learn and consciously balance yourself, because we don't want this to happen to us.
Well, she fell on she slipped on ice, you know. Tai Chi and ice, you know, that's not going to help. But you're right.
I know.
You're right.
I know.
We have to protect ourselves and you know, get that calcium into us.
Yeah, and so the next thing I would think about is, and what you were just talking about, is the importance of consciously doing what needs to be done to downsize and to, you know, maybe do it on a daily level, even if it's a half hour a day.
You know, that makes it much easier
mm-hmm.
if we do it. You know, make sure we're not keeping old bills going back 25 years, you know, bank statements and telephone bills and that sort of thing. You know, we really only need them for a year at the very, very most.
1 year, okay. You really have done your research in this book. So I'm going to tell you that you inspired me. I mean, we downsized about 2 years ago, and now everything's back. I mean, papers, books. And, you know, I do these radio interviews with authors, and I have as many books as you can imagine, and I don't really have the space for them. So I think Kindle is a wonderful downsizing tool for the kind of stuff that we're all involved with. And your book reads very well in Kindle. And the next thing that I was inspired to do, and I'm going to do it today, is to go out and buy a shredder. I just run away too many things with identifying information, and that's what made me nervous. When we were talking a little bit before the show, it makes me nervous to think about some of the things that never were a problem, never were challenges when we were younger, but this stealing identity is a real issue, a real problem. Talk to us about that. I know that you did your research, so give us some information on it. Yeah.
Interestingly, I've just learned about a second component to identity theft. First of all, I'll talk about the shredder, though. A cross-cut shredder is really the way to go, because
cross-cut?
It cuts the paper. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It cuts the paper in tinier pieces, and
yeah.
for anybody nefarious enough to start trying to put the little pieces together, it's more of a challenge, and there's less chance they'll bother with it.
Yeah.
So you shred anything with anything identifying on it, even your handwriting is something I'm getting more concerned about. Now, if you've just scribbled something, it's a different story. You know, I don't worry about that. But anything you've written out in your proper handwriting, I would shred that as well. And, of course, your signature and, you know, anything with a credit card number on it, a phone number on it, you know, anything like that that could be used to identify you in any way or anybody else, you know, your friends or clients.
I mean, there's obviously a lot of paper that comes through here, junk mail that doesn't have to be shredded. So it's not like you have to shred everything. And on, as my husband and I were talking about this earlier this morning, you don't want to shred anything. You want to remove staples and paper clips because that can ruin the shredder in 2 seconds.
Well, I'll remove paper clips only because I recycle them. But most shredders will eat staples.
Okay,
and some
good.
Of them will even eat credit cards.
Oh,
and
good.
Shred
even
them
better.
Up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I've heard there are ones now that shred CDs, although I wouldn't go to that extreme because if you can scratch a CD or break it, and that'll do just as well.
Right, okay. I was wondering if you were born in September. You have such a Virgo organized.
No, actually, I wasn't. I was born in June.
I wonder if you have Virgo rising or something, or even a moon and Virgo and a rising sign of Virgo, or maybe 5 planets in Virgo or something, because you really have thought this thing out. And a lot of people, as we were mentioning before this program, and myself included, it makes us anxious. Maybe the more, whimsical people. I'm a Pisces, for instance, and I'm not very organized. So maybe I shouldn't, you shouldn't brand yourself like that. Of course, we're everything. But the point being that it makes me anxious to think about this stuff.
Well, I'll give you something to make it more anxious.
Okay.
In the last little while, I've learned about these little machines that people can carry in a briefcase and walk down the street and with the new coding in credit cards, take your information off a credit card just by walking by you on the street.
Ooh,
and
where
then,
have they? Ooh.
Yeah.
Illegal.
And then go home or wherever they go and recreate that credit card and use it, and you get the bills for it.
Yes.
So there's a neat way to fix that. Just a piece of aluminum foil, tin foil. If you put some of that in your wallet on the outer side between the wallet and the cards, then the credit card, those readers can't get the information.
Okay.
Now, if you want to be fancy and wrap the credit cards in it, you can do that. But you can also get little cases that are made of metal, they're about half an inch thick, and you can put your credit cards in those that have that kind of coating on them, and that protects them.
Ah, okay.
And you.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these people are very creative. They should be using their creativity in ways to help people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, that's my feeling. Because, there are so many bad guys out there who are ready to rip us off. And I'm not trying to be, what's the word I want?
Alarmist?
Paranoid, alarmist, I'm not trying to be any of those things. I'm just trying to be realistic. And it does happen. And there was something on ABC a while ago. I should send you the link for that little clip because it really was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And, we have to be cautious. I don't say paranoid, but cautious. And that's where the cross-cut shredder comes in and these little other things to protect ourselves. Now, I realize, too, we can't protect ourselves 100%, but we can do our best, and that's the best we can do.
Well, yes, at least if we've done what we know things that we know we can do to protect ourselves, and we've done those things, then if something happens, we wouldn't berate ourselves as much for it happening.
But a piece of tinfoil in your wallet is an easy thing to do. Anybody can do that.
Yeah. That's right. Well, how prevalent is this practice of walking by people and scanning their credit card?
That I don't know yet. And I'm guessing it happens more in the big cities because the people tend to walk closer to each other in crowds on the streets.
Right.
I don't know. I live in a small town and I haven't heard of it happening here. But maybe people just don't know that it's happening. I don't know. But it is a big enough event that ABC TV did do a special on it.
Oh,
a while
really?
Back. Mm-hmm.
Oof. How long did it take you to write your book about downsizing?
It took about a year and a half. I had done some research and then let it sit for a while. And then about a year ago, I got back at it intensely. And it's just coming out now. But the last 6 months have been just production work.
No, I see that Balboa has published it. That's really cool.
Yes.
That's a subsidiary of Hay House.
Right.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. I'm very pleased that they did it for me.
Yes. I'm glad that they did, too. And you said it was cathartic to write this book. In what way was it?
It was. Well, because I was carrying all that information in my head, and I needed to get it out so I could think about something else. So that's where the catharsis came in. I got it on paper, and then, fine, it freed up my headspace for other things.
Right. And is this a subject you've been interested in for a long time, or is it just something that you recently, you know, since your mother's experience, is that what prompted it or inspired it?
I never thought about it much. To me, downsizing was what happens when you don't have a job anymore, that your company decides that you're redundant and out you go.
Oh, that's true. That's true,
And that's where the word downsizing really came into popularity. But it's only, I guess, in the last maybe 4 years that I've connected it, and it's been connected with people moving into a smaller space or eliminating a lot of the stuff they own.
And I think that almost everybody needs to say, you know, oh, here's another one. Do you have the show in Canada called, it's similar to Pack Rats, but it has to do with people who become obsessed with collecting stuff. And then
hoarding?
They become hoarding. Yeah, they have
hoarders.
And that's that's a very common problem.
It's more common than we know.
Yeah.
There's a hoarding coalition being formed where I live in North Bay, and I'm part of the organizing team. And I've worked with one hoarder in town already, and I was talking to one of the social service agencies yesterday, and I have an appointment on Monday to go and see another one to start working with them. And it's huge. It's huge.
Oh, my heavens. I think so. Well, that's why the show is so popular. You know, the show is so popular because everybody sees themselves in this problem. Now, you know, they're showing extreme problems with so much hoarding, with rats and everything coming in to take over. But heavens, you know.
Well, that's when it tips over into the mental illness side. The hoarders tend to be very intelligent people. But, you know, there's something in their brain that doesn't connect, and they don't understand that what they're doing is injurious to their health, injurious to the integrity of the building, the structure of the building with all that weight. And sometimes, you know, you've seen the show, sometimes if they have no heat or plumbing or water, other things can happen physically to them. So it's really it's quite serious.
Now, would you say that hoarding it happens to the elderly more often than to the middle-aged people in general? Because, as you say, you know, people who, as we age, we realize we have to cut down on our, quote, stuff. And then we don't want to. We can't get rid of things. And what you're talking about in your book addresses that problem, how to detach yourself from stuff, and how to be realistic about if you really need it or why, if you have a sentimental attachment to it, but you don't use it, it doesn't do anything for you, and it's just, you know, creating, hogging up space, that kind of thing.
Hoarding isn't an age thing, and young people can hoard. I've heard of stories of children hoarding. I've seen instances where families don't get it. I had a client one time that, you know, I'd be walking through stuff, garbage on the floor that was ankle deep, and the mom of the house just didn't understand that this was a family issue. it's downsizing and hoarding and eliminating a hoard aren't the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, downsizing is something that most of us do at some point in our lives. Hoarding is something, although it is a bigger issue, societal issue than we know, it's not the same. It's not the same mental process.
I would assume, though, that if you don't downsize at all, you know, because you're avoiding it, you're afraid of it, it makes you feel anxious, then hoarding would be the next step. Is what I mean, really, you're hoarding if you can't get rid of stuff.
It depends on the stuff, you know,
and
what you're keeping and why you're keeping it. If you use most of what you have and your house is clean and you've got, you know, plenty of space to walk around, you know, that's one thing. Although I did run into a hoarder who had everything was well organized in bins, but there was just way too much that she would never, ever use in her entire life.
Right.
So there's usually telltale signs, you know, that the groceries end up in the bedroom or the bathroom supplies end up in the kitchen, or, you know, there's things like that that are usually signs that there's some kind of an organization thing that's off track.
Right. And you help people with organization, is that right?
I do. That's primarily what I do.
You call yourself an organization coach?
A professional organizer is what I am.
Now, how can people reach you so that we can get that out on the table here?
Okay, the easiest way is through my website, www.goforwarddownsize.com. That's my book website, and people can buy the book there. There's a nice big red button on it on the homepage saying buy the book, and that will take them to a page that gives them all the places where the book can be purchased.
Okay. That would be Balboa, but probably Barnes & Noble, too, and Amazon.
Amazon, yeah.
Yes.
And it's available in all kinds of e-reader formats.
Oh,
not only
the
Kindle, but from Balboa, they have it available for the iPhone, for Nook, for three or four other different e-readers.
Yes, excellent.
Although I've heard recently there's some kind of technology that is either just coming out or is in the works to neutralize all the different e-readers so they can read each other's text.
Absolutely, it was the way it should be.
I agree, but, you know, there's competition.
Going way back,
VHS and Beta were in competition.
That's true. And, of course, we have the Macintosh and the...
PC.
PC. I don't even know the word for it anymore because I've had Macs for so long. Oh, my gosh. So my problem has been books. And I have a hard time even packing them up and getting rid of them. So what would be the best way for me to get rid of my books?
Books are one of my problems. I'm an information junkie.
Yes.
And I have a real problem getting rid of books. But what I've started doing is I give them to the public library.
Okay.
And they either put them on the shelf if they want the book, or they sell it the book to raise funds to purchase books they do want on their shelves.
Yes.
So I feel like I'm contributing to the greater good that way.
Wow.
Some people take them to secondhand bookstores and get credit for more books. You know, there's other ways to do it. You know, charities will accept books. There's different ways to get rid of it. I just choose the library.
I have my mom was a bookaholic, so I come by it. honestly, and she had when she passed on about, I'd say 1,000 books on the bookcase. So. I did pack them up, and I took them to the prison.
That's a great story because
a friend of mine worked at the prison at the time, and many of the books, it would say things like, to my darling husband and our 35th wedding anniversary, I mean, they were married nearly 50 years, and she died about 2 months before their 50th anniversary. So all those books, there are a lot of books like that, for my darling wife on our 40th anniversary, or at Christmas, or at, you know, Mother's Day, or anything at all. And the prisoners have had, a lot of them have dysfunctional homes. And they would see these inscriptions, and they would just have a wonderful time with it. So I had heard that secondhand. Not only was it a gift to give the books, but something about the vibrations of the love that my parents had for each other certainly affected them deeply. I thought that was pretty cool.
Show them a side of life that they weren't familiar with, maybe.
Yeah. But I have a whole barn full of books, and if I don't get rid of them, they're going to possibly deteriorate in some of the weather conditions that have happened out there.
Well,
so I have
if you're
move,
talking, depending on how comfortable your barn is, they could be moldy by now.
Yeah, I mean, it's some problems. I might just have to get rid of them all.
And it's hard.
Yeah, well,
but
that's probably
also
what I have
consider
to do.
If they're in your home. I know you said they're in your barn, but for some of our listeners, if they're in the books are in their home, that's an extreme weight on the floor of the building too,
yeah.
And that can also create structural problems.
Mhm, mhm. Wow, that's a good point. So getting rid of all those books would relieve the barn of a lot of weight.
Mhm,
mhm.
So there are many things to consider when there's you're keeping a lot of stuff, especially the heavy stuff. And eventually, with enough of it, it does get very heavy.
Yes. And of course, there's lots of weighty furniture and stuff like that. It even gets weightier. But when you have a lot of, but you have a lot of books. That is a prime consideration.
Or even a lot of clothes. You know, if you reach the point that your closet, the hanging bar, if it breaks or falls off the wall, you know you've got too many clothes on it because it's too heavy to hold. The structure doesn't hold.
That's right. Well, have you ever heard of the story of people who have given up all of their worldly possessions? So, for instance, and I've taken basically the vow of poverty, and I'm thinking in particular of Peace Pilgrim. Have you ever heard of her?
Who's that?
Peace Pilgrim.
No, I haven't.
So she is, years ago, probably in the early 50s, began to walk across the country to protest the war tax, probably, and war in general. And she was very, very spiritual. And she walked the country and would be, and as more and more people heard of her, they would take her into their home for a day or two just to be in her presence. And, you know, she was like a spiritual guru, really, real high enlightened being. And after maybe 25 years of this, she was hit by a car and killed instantly. An amazing woman. And then, of course, there are people who take women going into convents and men going into cloistered areas. And, you know, they're giving everything up. And that's just an amazing thing to consider. I mean, obviously, the normal, ordinary person like myself and wouldn't think about doing that, but it has always been attractive to me. It would be so cool to get rid of everything like that and live very, very frugally and not worry about all this stuff that we really can't take with us. You can't take it with you. Yeah, you know, basically, that's the truth.
You know, I was speaking to a group one time of retired teachers and I about downsizing, and I said to them, have you ever seen a U-Haul following a hearse?
Yeah,
and, of course, the room
yeah.
broke up in laughter, but, you know, there's a point.
There really is. And that is really what we ultimately have to think about when we're doing it. Now, first of all, people are talking about denial. People don't like to think about the fact that they're going to be leaving this plane of existence. They A gentleman on my program the other day called it the great mystery. You know, basically we are going somewhere where we don't know where we're going. And or people might not have any belief in the great mystery, and they might think that everything ends at the end, and they're terrified of it. They're terrified of the unknown, and they just don't want to think about it. So that's partly why people don't downsize or want to think about it.
Well, you know, there's all those stories about the pharaohs in Egypt and when they're buried in those great pyramid tombs of all the things that went with them. You know, their dogs, their servants, their, you know, every and all the food that they were going to need for the hereafter. You know, I think that's one of the things that we're trying to do is protect ourselves from that journey.
Yes, and they knew it was a journey, so it didn't bother them. But let's talk a little bit about downsizing animals. That's very hard. Very difficult for people.
Yeah. Well, you know, it comes to the point that you have to ask how many animals are too many, and are the animals really being properly cared for? You know, they have a couple of dogs or a few cats. That's not a problem, but if you end up having hundreds of either and, it just there's no way anybody can properly care for them and have them survive.
Right, right.
You know, they get sick. They overbreed. They, you know, they die in place because there's no room for them to go anywhere else. And to keep all the area clean and healthy for them, it becomes humanly impossible.
Right.
So it's the animals who really suffer from that.
Well, even if you have a few animals and you fall and you have to move into a nursing home, you have to get rid of these animals. That is tragic because people... Well, the gentleman on my radio show the other night, the name of the book he wrote is called Goodbye Friends. And little do these hospital places, you know, these institutions really need to utilize animals in their, living in. Because
on the therapy programs.
Well, even more so than that. But anyway, this kid was in a pretty severe coma. It looked like he was going to die. And every time the family was sitting around talking about his dog, his own dog, he would light up a little bit. They saw a change in the way he was acting. And so they were able to get the permission to bring the dog in. And then he came out of the coma. So
isn't that interesting?
Yeah. And so I would think that a lot of stories could end up like that if people would only use animals in the process. Okay, you're going to hear a little beep. The reason I'm doing this is because my dog is being, speaking of animals, is being a little bit rambunctious. I'm going to keep her in the car, but I do have to put the windows down. So there's going to be a beep. Anyway, our animals are very, some people find their animals to be more important than even the people. So we have to really be sensitive to the fact that if we were able to bring our animals along with us into these places, we would probably be happier. Now, there's another problem that you did touch upon in your book, and that is the severe depression that happens with the elderly in general is a huge problem. And if they could bring their one animal, not all of them, you have to downsize them, they would be much, much happier. And more productive, more innovative, more a part of the community.
I agree with that. However, the other side of the coin is there are people who are allergic to different kinds of animals.
And also
people who are afraid of them. You know, may have had an incident in their early childhood that may only resurface in their senior years when they're confronted with an animal.
So it's
a really tough call. You know, I can see both sides of the situation.
Yes. Well, you know, for me, you could imagine having a nursing home which allowed pets, one pet from the household, and the people who would be willingly go in there would love animals. So you would have a nursing home like that. And also we also need to have a whole, revamping of the nursing home idea because it's not really cool at all. But anyway, it's just an interesting problem. I know somebody now who's in her, I think she's about to be 70, and she has had a kennel. And she had a lot of border carriers, which she had shown and shows and stuff. And she probably had something like 25, 30 dogs. Now she can only really have two. She's lucky that she's found a place that will let her have two dogs. And, of course, she may not feel so lucky because she has to get rid of these animals that she's loved for so many years. But anyway, it's the animal downsizing thing is quite a dilemma because it really causes a broken heart, I think.
Mm-hmm. For people who are very, very close to their animals, I don't happen to have any because I do have allergies. But when friends of mine lose their pets, you know, certain ones of them, I feel very, very sad because I've taken a liking to them. Other ones don't matter so much, but you know, there are certain ones that I feel really, really sad. And when I visit, I miss the dog or the cat that I'm used to seeing there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm sure the owner would have that amplified, that feeling would be amplified for them.
Yeah.
Like so, when you lost your dog, that was really hard.
I know. This guy who was on the radio show the other night said that he really recommends that people wait a full year before getting another dog. I couldn't even wait a month, but I did. Like the emptiness was so apparent that I just and it was very magical how she came into our lives too. So it's animals.
So it was meant to be then.
It was meant to be. So really, downsizing is something that really goes across the whole spectrum of age groups.
It does.
Look at the toys that little kids. I've seen people accumulate so many toys that it's for their kids that you can't even walk into the house. So they're talking about that kind of problem with little children.
I'm not sure, depending on the age of the children, it's not the children's issue, it's the parents' issue.
No,
and I wonder
what
are they trying to compensate for by giving the kids material things when the kid might just be just as happy with a big empty box.
That's right. That's right. Yeah,
especially
right.
Children who have an imagination. That box can be anything from a big house to a fort to a truck to a, you know, their imaginations are wonderful.
Yes. So where do you recommend disposing of? You just mentioned what we can do with our books, and that could be the library that we talked about, the prison and Goodwill and such, and you know, selling them at yard sales perhaps. But where can we dispose of other things that we might need to get rid of?
Yeah, depending what they are. Sometimes different cities have consignment stores that will accept items, whether it's children's toys or clothing or adults' clothing, and you can get a percentage of the sale price. You don't get anywhere near what the item is worth or what you paid for it. But it does, you get a little bit back. It's usually about 45% to 60%, depending on the store. If you're doing an estate sale, if you have a large number of items for people who are downsizing a big house to a smaller, very much smaller place, there are estate sales. But, again, you get a percentage of the sale price. It takes a little bit of organizing to get that set up. Where else? Magazines can always go to doctor's offices or hospital waiting rooms. Usually the magazines are really out of date in those places. Psychiatric hospitals are always welcoming of clothing and books because people don't think of people with mental illness of not having, sometimes not having the resources to buy clothing for themselves.
That's right.
Women's shelters, again, for pretty much anything, depending on how much storage they have. I've done some work with a women's shelter, and they would have clothing, sometimes children's toys. They would have books and sometimes furniture, depending on how much space they had and who was moving out and took it with them. Anything, any household goods for women starting over. Where else can I think of? The library, of course, for books. I guess that's about it. That's about all I can think of at the moment. So there are plenty of places.
A lot of times, say, in our hospital, people are going to Haiti and they like to collect, well, not mm-hmm. only medical supplies that are outdated, but for clothing for the people in war-torn or natural disaster-torn areas.
If you have a connection where you can have the goods shipped at a very reasonable price, that's another excellent idea.
Mm-hmm.
I sent some boxes off to Africa a few months ago, and the postage was horrendous.
Oh, okay.
Really second-guessed myself, and I thought, you know, it would have been better to send them the money and have them buy the items in their own country than having me ship used things from here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something to consider. But if, you know, if you have a connection that has, you know, good shipping, reasonably priced shipping, then that's another really good way to send things.
Right.
Hygiene products as well. You know, that's things.
You know,
can
what
be
you
used.
Have, you have this cool thing in your book where you can download a kind of a roadmap and guide, a perfect guide for downsizing. And so when people will buy your book, excuse me, they can go to that place in on your website to help them organize. It's like a
mm-hmm.
kind of a spreadsheet, I would call it.
Yeah, that's a private page that's not visible to visitors, but it's only available through the links that I've written in the book.
Exactly. So people need to buy your book to get those links, and it's very helpful, very helpful. And because people do have emotional ties to their things, and I know that some of the stuff that I even got from my parents, my dad died in 2000 and my mom died in 1987, and there's still stuff that I have a problem getting rid of, but
mm-hmm.
one interesting thing happened recently. I had this old watch of my dad's that was lying around. It didn't work, and it was really dirty, and it had really been worn out, and I could have just thrown that away. But what I did do was get a friend of mine is a fixes watches, and he's like 85 years of age. He actually fixed this watch, so it really is stunningly beautiful, plus it keeps perfect time. So when I got that watch recently, within a day, my dad's 102-year-old sister died, which I found to be very interesting, and the watch stopped at the time of her death.
Oh.
However, I rewound it and set it, and it worked. But I thought, why? And it's worked perfectly ever since. So, you know, these possessions not only have emotional things that you're affiliated with, but I think they have a way of, especially something like a watch that he wore every day of my life, because it's an old watch, has particular ways that you can communicate with them when they've passed on. But I know
there's a song about that. I don't know how long ago. And I don't remember the whole thing, but when you said you're talking about your father's watch, the words were something like, and the clock stopped something, something when the old man died, never to go again.
Yeah, I think it's called the grandfather clock.
It probably was, yes. It's interesting stories will pull things from very recessed memory, old memories.
I know. But one of the things we really don't want is to have our children have to deal with all this stuff. So,
absolutely.
And that would be the most practical way for people to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
In general, to say, you know, okay, I might be afraid to die, so I don't want to think about it, or I don't want to give up all this stuff, and so I just will think about it tomorrow, like Scarlett O'Hara. But the fact is, we don't want this stuff to fall into the hands of our children. It's not fair. It's not fair
exactly.
to them. So
mm-hmm.
I think that would be one segue for you to you know, get people to say, yeah, that's right, I think I'll read that book because I don't want my kids to have to deal with this.
Well, it's interesting.
It's just not
fair. I had a client a few years ago. She was 70-something, and she called me because she was dealing with two estates, And because she was 70-something, she realized that one day she would be leaving all her stuff for her kids to deal with, exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
And she decided that this wasn't fair, and she was going to deal with it herself. So we started working on downsizing her and helping her get rid of the other things from the estate. Now, she had pieces of furniture, and her basement looked like an antique store. But because she had accepted these estates and had to deal with them, and she was really working hard on dealing with her own stuff so her children wouldn't have to. But then I know another woman who's 80-something, and I talked to her about it, and she said, I don't care. My kids can take care of it.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, different attitudes towards it.
It is. It is. However, this brings up another question that comes up in your book. If you're going to just let everybody deal with it, then you at least should make plans for what is one person should be, you know, what one person should get and what another person should get.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
that can cause a lot of dissension in families is when
oh,
somebody
absolutely.
Dies. Yeah. So address
yeah,
that one a little bit. You have some good stories about that in your book.
Well, the best thing I can see to do that is to call a family meeting. Excuse me. Tell them I have no intentions of dying anytime soon.
Yeah.
But it's going to happen someday. Excuse me just a sec. I think we both have fuzzy throats this morning.
We're both allergies, have some allergies. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. And, yes, with this family meeting, tell them that there's no way you're going to be leaving this earth plane anytime soon. But it will happen at some point. So what would they like from the household that they could either take now if they wanted or put their name on so when the time came that they would get whatever they wanted? And chances are that not everybody's going to want the same items. And
right.
what the individuals want could be very surprising is what you think they'll want.
Mm-hmm.
So just, you know, do that, and if they take the things right away, then you've started the downsizing process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a great website that talks about this, and it's called Grandma's Yellow Pie Plate. So if people Google that, Grandma's Yellow Pie Plate, there's wonderful resources there.
What is it? Google Grandma's Yellow Pie Plate?
Grandma's Yellow Pie Plate.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it gives all kinds of instructions, more than I put in the book, on how to dispose of family items. I won't say heirlooms because often they're not heirlooms, but, you know, things that somebody in the family used, like your father's watch. It meant a lot to you, and you've kept it, and you know it's running, and you wear it. But, you know, it could be, I don't know, a little pitcher that was held cream when you were a little child and you put it on your cereal that
mm-hmm,
didn't mean anything
mm-hmm.
to anybody else. You know, those kinds of things?
Well, and then you have this watch that should go to somebody when I die. And I should think about that.
Mm-hmm.
And as you mentioned, these things can become overwhelming if you're trying to do it all in a day. So it's good
well,
to
you can't
parcel
do
it,
in a
it
day.
Out. No, I know.
Yeah.
Impossible.
Yeah, and do it over time. So, because the emotional part of it is something that we never think about. You know,
mm-hmm.
like when I was getting rid of my mother's apartment and what went on there. You know, I was unprepared for the emotion that I felt,
mm-hmm.
and so I recognize that if I have these feelings, other people can have them too. I mean, they don't. Maybe they don't, but maybe they do. You know, there's a 50-50 chance on that one. And
yes.
to be prepared for it and start working at it early so you can deal with the emotions as you go along and
mm-hmm.
not be so overwhelmed at the end that you become paralyzed.
Yes. I think we have to be realistic.
Yes.
And realize that we're human. So,
we are.
Yeah.
As much as we don't want to believe that sometimes.
And in the process, we need to do things that do the right thing, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And make it easy on the ones coming behind us.
Yes, yes.
because, you know, ideally you'd want them to feel sad when you go.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't need to, you know, have a house, you know, from floor to ceiling with material goods to deal with as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, material goods, really, if you have too much stuff, it just bogs you down psychically. And, of course, I know you don't deal with the whole art form of feng shui, but I bet that you do, in the work that you do, you actually are using feng shui to make a room or a space more comfortable for people. It's actually part of what feng shui really is.
Mm-hmm. But then the other thing that I do is I help people understand that the things that they value most, if they really truly value them, then they need to be able to see them to enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise,
mm-hmm.
what's the point? Just knowing they're buried in a box someplace or not knowing where they are at all in the house. You know,
right.
If you really like something, then look at it every day and enjoy what it means to you and the stories that go behind it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, that's another thing. How about family pictures? Let's talk about that.
Family pictures. Well, again,
that's
depending
a big one.
On the
that's
quantity.
That's a huge one. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, this, in fact, is something that I'm dealing with right now. In my last move, I had realized I had 4 Rubbermaid bins, big ones, of photo albums and pictures that weren't filed and other stuff that was going to go into the photo albums that, you know, tourist information and things from travels.
Mm-hmm.
And I just came to the point that I realized, what am I keeping this for? I haven't looked at these albums since I created them, some
mm-hmm.
of them 30 years ago, and I don't have children, so whoever's coming behind me isn't going to know who all these people are.
Right.
Many of them aren't in my life anymore, so why am I keeping them?
Mm-hmm.
So I've been going
mm-hmm.
through that and keeping a small number of pictures that I can keep in a nice little box that I can go through and look at when I feel like it. And anything historical, I'll scan and keep on my computer for my genealogical research.
Mm-hmm.
So it's another journey to go through.
It is, isn't it?
And,
yeah.
You know, other people for boxes and albums, and it's nice to have them, but who's going to deal with them in the future?
I know. It's coming to the point where I have all these family albums that I just need to give to somebody. I have, my sister has 3 children, and then now there's 3 girls, and these girls are also having children, and I know
mm-hmm.
that they would be interested. But also, like you say, you can't just give them away without letting them know who the people are. And I
mm-hmm.
barely know who they are, but I have a vague memory of them, some of them.
Well, if they're family, you know, if you know any stories at all about who they are and the occasion that was where the picture was taken, write them down and let them go, send them off with the albums.
Yeah.
But friends of yours, say from childhood, who you never see anymore, your nieces and nephews aren't going to be interested in them.
That's true. So what would you do with them?
Well, if you want to keep them for now,
yeah.
take them out of the
yeah.
albums and keep them in a nice little photo box. You can get some good acid-free little cardboard photo boxes that you can
mm-hmm.
just put them in according to date or by, you know, individual or however you want to do it
mm-hmm.
and keep them and look at them when you want to, but then that's not going to mean anything to anybody else.
Right, right.
And then
that's
let the, you know, the descendants
yeah.
have the albums with containing family photos that with the stories that go with the pictures.
Right. Interesting. How these things crop up. Go ahead.
When I started doing some genealogical research a few years ago, you know, I was kicking myself many times because I started to find pictures that other family members had sent me, family that I didn't know from across the country that were, I don't know, children of my grandfather's siblings. And, you know, I'd see this newspaper clipping and I'd say, oh, that's who was in that picture that I threw away. You know, so it's important to put the names of the family on the picture so people a few generations later know who they are, because even if they've never met them, you know, that old Uncle George who went west when he was 16 and, you know, he's died at 80-something and this is 10 or 15 years later, who's going to be around who's going to know that now?
Yes. I guess you can get a lot of genealogical information from pictures if you know who the people are. But if you don't know, it's lost info.
Yeah, it is.
So, so tell us again your website so we can record that, have that at the end of the show.
Okay. It's www.goforwarddownsize.com. There's two D's.
And you were telling me that you were thinking of doing a virtual kind of business online, helping people organize. So it's you do a local business, obviously, but now you're going to branch out. You're going to branch out to the world.
That's my plan.
It's a great idea.
I'm learning now how to do it. It will make it so much easier for clients who are in a place where there isn't a professional organizer to find me online, and I can work with them over the computer. They just have a webcam, and they show me what their place looks like, and I can coach them through how to improve it, how to organize it, how to get rid of things. I can do some research in their area and find out where they can get rid of things. So I'm thinking that that would be a really good service to offer.
I think so. I think it's brilliant. And good luck with that. Yeah, it's just, I guess you have a virtual assistant. I know I would need one.
Oh, yes. I actually have two virtual assistants that I use, and it's saved my bacon on more than one occasion that I just don't know how to do certain things technologically. And I don't have the technology to do some of the things that I need done. So I just find the virtual assistant who has the software to do this for me or do that for me. And then when it's sent back to me, then I put it where it wants to be. And it's great. So the people working with virtual whatevers, assistants or organizers or marketers or copywriters, I think that's a growing field now.
Yes. Yeah, because I know I can't possibly do it by myself, and there's a lot to do, isn't there?
There really is. Or, you know, like bookkeeping, I'm not sure about doing that virtually, but, you know, it's all about delegating and outsourcing, do the things that we're best at doing and let other people do what they're best at doing.
Yes. Bookkeeping is something that is important as an organizational tool. So you do that with the people in your area? With the bookkeeping?
I don't do bookkeeping, no. I'm talking about my own bookkeeping. Bookkeeping for my business.
Yes. I understand. So, Maureen, I wish you all the luck in the world and all the best wishes and success, I should say, for your book. And let's hope what I'll do is get this link to you and make a blog post about it and with the radio show on it. We can pass it all over the internet. And what day is this of your virtual book tour? I failed to mention that you are on a virtual book tour.
I am. This interview will appear tomorrow, which is day 9 of my virtual
day 9
book tour.
Congratulations.
Day 9. Yes, I'm almost at the end of it. This is fun.
It is fun.
It's been a wonderful journey.
It is a wonderful journey, and we have a lot to teach each other and to help each other with. And so let's keep in touch. I appreciate your support, and I appreciate your efforts at what you're doing. So,
And right back at you.
Okay,
it's been a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kate.
I'm going to be playing music for mother and child.
Love it.
Love you.